6640.
Your future lies in 6640.
66 books by 40 authors, and yet we now discover it's an integrated message system from outside our time domain.
Welcome to 6640, Chuck Missler's daily program connecting the Bible to your life and the world around you. It's God's plan that began before time, and it's your future. It's a plan that includes you. Now here's the host of 6640, John Leffler.
I once told a pastor that if I sat down and listened to a sermon, and I got to the end of that sermon, however long it lasted, and I got to the end of the sermon and I couldn't answer the question, so what? That had been a vast waste of my time, and I almost resented the fact that he took 40 minutes of my time without telling me anything. Welcome to 6640, and that sounds like a pretty harsh judgment, but the point is, if we're not doing what we're doing here as far as our spiritual lives and walk are concerned for a purpose, then why bother to do them? And too many churches fall into this trap. We hear endless hours of teaching, but how much of the teaching is relevant to actually being implemented within our lives? I don't mean relevant to becoming worldly. I mean, how well do we implement it in our lives? And then how much training is there for actual spiritual combat? And the answer is quite often not a lot. Welcome to 6640. That's the importance of a thing we called muscle memory yesterday, where you go through a process of training things that you have learned in your mind. They have become imprinted on the mind and then are reinforced in the muscle and the nervous and muscle pathways so that whatever the skill you are acting upon, whether it's a mental skill or a physical sport or combat or flying an airplane or whatever it might happen to be, things happen simply because you have been trained to deal with them. And when circumstances arise, they are not surprising to you. We started a series 2 weeks ago called Weathering the Coming Storms with Dr. Chuck Missler and with Ron Madsen. And Ron Madsen has been discussing the last couple of days the whole idea of muscle memory, preparing for things, imprinting, knowing what you are and where you stand. And those brothers and sisters of ours who have gone before us, especially those who live through persecution, have told us much the same thing. You have to understand what the times are and what your plans are should issues arise. You can't be thinking them through as they go. And of course, the source of all your direction has got to come from the Lord. So continuing our series here, Weathering the Coming Storms, geopolitically, politically, energy-wise, or even changes within society, how do you weather those? What is the rock upon which you stand? Here's Ron Madsen.
You see, we don't need to switch on our consciousness to pick up a cup of coffee from the table where we keep on reading the morning paper, while we are listening to the tune on the radio. These are automatic things, but we have learned them. We do this all the time. If you've ever been somewhere where you are approaching a staircase, you notice you look for the first step. Once you have made the first step, you have now trained yourself what to expect until you're at the top. That's why architects have to be very careful that they make each tread exactly the same dimension, because if they don't, people are going to fall. And there's been lawsuits that have been lost by architects who have made just, you know, centimeter differences in stair treads because everyone expects stair treads to be exactly the same dimension as you go up. So as soon as you take that first step, you now have trained yourself what to do. And then perhaps if you have a stairwell in your own house, you don't even look at that first step anymore. You know exactly where it is, or so on and so forth. And so as a result of that, we experience what is really referred to as the illusion of multitasking. We think we're multitasking. And if you want to do some interesting, some fun research, go on YouTube and type in the word multitasking surveys. And there's some hilarious people who think they can multitask when in fact they're really tested, they can't. The process of multitasking is an illusion by the fact that we are doing a lot of things automatically, in that sense, multitasking, but we're not doing it consciously. Our conscious mind can only work on one or two things at a time. The unconscious mind processes 200,000 times more information than our conscious mind. 90% of what we do is done unconsciously. It has memory only partially imprinted by our conscious mind through a cognitive process and practice. And so it is really the repository of who we are in the mainstream, is this sense of who We've become by what we've done and what we've been exposed to. It's programmed partially through cognitive processes, but it's programmed through a kind of neural imprinting. It's affected by our genetic makeup, by our sensory inputs, by our cognitive processing, by our subliminal impressions, and spiritual influences. You know, the psychological community will, of course, take that spiritual and they'll just simply say that is the psyche of man, which is just simply the word for spirit, and they divide that into three elements, the ego, the id, and the superego. So when people tell you you're on an ego trip, they're using a Freudian term. But they're referring to the spirit of man. So even within secular psychology, they acknowledge in the spiritual realm there's a trinity. I'll leave that where that is. But nonetheless, it's making reference to the fact that as individuals, that which we do so often is a result of loads of information that has been imprinted in us through various and sundry methods and sources of input. The conscious mind, or the area of cognitive thinking, has to make decisions on what we will focus on and contemplate, while the unconscious mind takes care of everything else. That's the way we are wired. It's been proven through science. It is the way in which we work. Our conscious mind is fed by our sensory devices, by our memory. The sensory devices, which can be fooled, by the way. Have you ever thought you saw something that you didn't see? Well, your sensory devices is one source that's feeding your conscious mind, which can be fooled. Our memory, which is flawed. You all agree with that? Especially when you get older, you begin to, you know that your memory is flawed. And our imagination, interestingly enough. Psychologists admit that there is this element that is an input into our mind, which is inventive, which does not necessarily have to come from any external or input or memory. And they see this inventive side of us, because if it was not so, we could not imagine something that hasn't happened before. And thus we have art and music and invention in the broad sense that comes from, and the conscious mind can think in this imaginative way. So it's not a computer which can only produce product based on the information it has. It produces product which it can imagine out of thin air in that sense. And so psychologists are quite amazed at that capacity of the mind to be conscious of what we sense, what we remember, and what we can imagine. And from that, we construct the reality that we believe we are witnessing. And these perceptions form the building blocks of the world we navigate through in this giant simulation we call reality. I mean, it's very complex. By the way, most of these texts hadn't come from some Bible teacher. These are from scientists who are studying the character of the soul of man, trying to understand. We are very complex, and yet there's lots of work showing how do we think and why do we act the way we act. Our senses, as we have shown, are really the doors, the gates, the windows for our soul. They feed information to the mind. One doctor referred to the mind as a computer that sits in a windowless room and makes decisions that it perceives to be true based on the sensors that are feeding it. What a fantastic way to address the sense of who we are. Luke chapter 11, verse 34, the lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is good, your whole body is full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body is full of darkness. Yet again, another reference to the fact that when you think of our sensory devices, if we are looking at something that's pure and true, the inward man is illuminated with truth. But if he is looking at something that's deceptive, the whole body then is bad. The eye is bad, the body is full of darkness. Let's look now at what I call the soul under siege. So we've looked at the substance of the soul in real general, almost cartoonish type terms, but trying to give you a sense of the construction of the soul diagrammatically. We've looked at the system of the soul, how some of those aspects of the soul interplay with each other. Now we're going to look at really the heart of the issue, and it has to do with the soul under siege. Again, I'm using this this type as a castle and seeing it under siege. How perceptive are you? Would you recognize a threat if you saw it? Well, I'm going to give you a little test. And hopefully you didn't read ahead because it'll spoil the test. But you're going to have 5 seconds to pick one card. I'm going to put 5 cards on the screen. I want you to pick one. All right? You have 5 seconds to do so. And I want you to concentrate on that card. And I want you to say the name in your mind 3 times. Okay? All right, you pick your card. Now I will test if I can remove your card from that deck. Now you remember your card. I'm going to see if I can remove it. You ready? Did I remove it? Spooky, isn't it? How did I know? How did I know? You're all wondering. Hold on. Now, that's a simple demonstration of lots of different things that psychologists look at with regards to how perceptive we are. You see, the only place we appear to operate is where we consciously place our attention. And that's very true. The cognitive mind is the watchtower of our unconscious memory storage. And it all depends on what we're concentrating on. Everything else in that field of view is peripheral, and our automatic brain reacts to it and guides us through the daily tasks of living. And it's been proven that your conscious mind can't perceive everything that's around it. And so it has a very narrow field of view in which you can focus. The more familiar we are with our environment, the more our conscious mind can focus on new information. And so have you ever noticed if you go on a journey to some place that you've never been before, how it seems to take longer going than it is when you come back? The reason why is when you're going, you're unfamiliar with what you're seeing, but when you're coming back, you're familiar, at least in a reverse direction, with what to expect, and so your mind relaxes, and it seems like it takes a shorter amount of time. That's another experiment of the fact that as we are discovering something that's new, our mind has to narrow its field of view and focus very, very intently. And so it's tiring. But when you do something that's automatic, you don't have to do that. It just seems natural. I remember years ago when living in the south of England, I was working for 10 and a half years as a management consultant with first IBM and then Lockheed Martin in the same facility there in Portsmouth. And one Saturday morning, I got up and I told the boys I was going to take them to the local bowling alley. We were going to go out and have a lad's day out. And so I got in the car and the kids were all excited and off I went. And all of a sudden, the car got really quiet. And I thought, well, that's pretty nice. And so we're driving along and I pulled into the car park. And all of a sudden, my kids are like, Dad, what are you doing? What? Why did you drive to work? Wow. Have you ever done that? You know, you drive somewhere and you get to the other end and go, how did I get here? Well, it's that sense of the more familiar you are with something, you just don't even have to think about it. Now, you are conscious in the sense that you know what's going on, but your cognitive mind doesn't have to work. So you can be thinking about other things. And when you're doing familiar things, that's why you can be doing something that is automatic. At the same time, the more you do that, it allows your mind to daydream and get off into other, more pleasurable kinds of engagements. You see, what happens is we suppress information we determine is unnecessary. And a lot of that is done unconsciously. As we look, we only pay attention to the things that we believe to be important. And everything else around us, we don't perceive as being important. Our cognitive mind can only address 4 to 5 pieces of information at one moment. Where you see that, of course, notice your credit card. Notice how the numbers are arranged. They're arranged in 4-digit numbers. Have you ever had somebody who gives you a phone number that's 0231456789? You're going, what was that again? Can you say that again? I'm one of those that when I leave a phone number on somebody's answer phone, I give it to them twice. Because I know the number of times that I have to listen to this whole 5-minute message just to get, what was that number? Because we honestly can't pay attention, even when we're trying. And so in most areas, you'll notice that you'll only be required to remember. And when you give your own phone number out, I bet you give it out in either 2, 3, or 4-digit lumps. 077, da-da-da-da, and you know, and that's how we break life up. Now, remember the 5 playing cards? How did I know your card? I replaced them all. I replaced them all. But you see, if you didn't cheat and look ahead, what will happen is I replaced them with the cards below. They were similar but not the same. And in doing that, what's happening is you only notice the card you were paying attention to, that it went missing. And that's what we do. Consciously, we only notice the things that we pay attention to. Now, attention diversion is what they call it, is the key to illusion and deception. Attention diversion. If I can get you to look at something else, then I can fool you. And any illusionist knows that. There is no magic. It's deception. It's all about managing our perceptions. Our mind merges sensory input into a consolidated perception. And so we consolidate all of what we believe is there into what we believe is true. But in fact, we're only perceiving that which we are paying attention to. Now, of course, we live in an age where we experience knowingly that we can be fooled by multi-sensor simulators. If you've ever been in one of these devices or been around a virtual reality device that either you sit in or you participate in, it can give you all kinds of senses that you're flying or driving or falling or doing whatever. And it's that sense that if I control the input into you, I can make you feel as though you're doing something that physically you actually are not. This is a big deal, by the way, in the aerospace industry, because it is so expensive to fly around these multi-million dollar jet airplanes. It's much cheaper to take a pilot into a full motion cockpit simulator and have him experience flying and crashing in a simulator rather than crash a $30 or $40 million aircraft. And when you go in these simulators, in which I have been, you would hardly tell the difference. It has all of the senses that you would get, the scope and scale of what you see out the cockpit. You would think you're in a real aircraft. And that's the sense of what they have now in terms of the ability to stimulate our sensors into believing we're in an environment which is not real. But for the purposes of training, of course, it is real. But we're also discovering something else. We are learning to not only be a receiver, but a transmitter through senses. There's a fellow in Reading, in the UK, a doctor, an engineer, who has attached devices to his central nervous system, and he can operate a mechanical hand over the internet. There are devices, you always talk about your mother has an eye in the back of her head. Well, they've actually experimented with a device which is hooked to the central nervous system, and it is a camera, and the person can see in their mind through that device. So all of a sudden, they can consciously decide whether they are looking forward or backward. And these are experiments that are quite well documented. This isn't quackery here. This is sophisticated engineering. And, of course, if you want to know more about that, Tom Horn and Chuck Missler did a really nice package called The Hybrid Age, which they delve into that. And I think it's a great thing for us as Christians to be aware of the fact that this is the environment in which we live. Those of you that have children, this is the environment your children are being raised up in and being trained in. If you're unaware of what's taking place because of ignorance, arm yourself with an understanding in this area. You see, attention is like mental money. Be careful how you use it. Illusion is caused by change blindness, the idea of changing or confusing you with regards to your environment because you're focused on the wrong issues. You see, we only notice change when it occurs within the field of our very narrow focus. You do not detect change where you do not think a change should appear. That is true. That's the way the pickpocket works. This is a picture of a real crime taking place. It was one of these, snap-type things where an individual was going to pick the pocket of a policeman on camera, and he pulled it off. Why? Because the policeman is his attention is diverted away, and so the pickpocket is able to pick the pocket of the policeman. That's how that's done. They're not that clever. It's just if your attention is elsewhere, you will not notice what's taking place. We are basically single processors only, one function at a time in a very narrow field of view. We suffer from what the psychologists refer to as multiprocessing blindness, that when we have an overload of information that we are surrounded in, we no longer can perceive what's happening around us. This is also referred to as inattentional blindness. Now, years ago, I was a private pilot working my way up to a commercial license, and to do that, I had to get an instrument license. Now, an instrument license means that you can fly without seeing anything other than the instruments inside the cockpit. And to do that, you need to recognize that you have lots of little dials and gauges and things in front of you, but you need to know which ones to trust. And that when you get vertigo, you need to understand which ones to focus on, because as you begin as your body begins to tell you, you're turning left, you're climbing, that's what you're feeling like, you need to trust your instruments over the sense of what's happening within your body. And it's a temptation for anybody that's, quote, in the soup, where you can't see anything other than, and you're in this three-dimensional space, and you are not necessarily aware of horizon, you can be blind. And so you need to understand what instruments to look at. You need to look at the artificial horizon. You need to look at climb indicator to tell you, are you climbing or are you descending? You need to look at your airspeed indicator. You need to look at these key devices to know what's the attitude of my airplane, regardless of how I feel. And so as an instrument pilot, you have to override your senses, which is a very interesting experience to do. And I remember that one of the things they did was they would take you out and they would put you what's called under the hood, because obviously they don't want to do this on a real cloudy day, but they would take you out on a clear day. They'd put this hood over you so you couldn't see outside the aircraft. They'd make you put your head down looking at your lap, and then the guy would begin to do very violent aerobatic things, and essentially to make you sick, so that your body is really, your inner ear is really screwed up. And as a result of that, you found yourself, when he would finally say, okay, now fly the airplane, you have no idea what the attitude of the airplane is. But you're not allowed to look outside. You have to look at your instruments. And it's an incredible thing to override that sensation, to trust your senses. Well, that's that sense of the fact that you're overloaded and you have to choose which input you are going to trust. So, given all of that, why do we experience behavioral difficulty?
Weathering the coming storm. And believe it or not, this new six-session briefing series with Dr. Chuck Missler and Ron Madsen is available on DVD and audio CD. If you'd like the full six-session briefing, give us a call here at 1-800-KHOUSE1, 1-800-KHOUSE, and then the number 1, and ask about the series Weathering the Coming Storm, either the series on DVD or on audio CD. 1-800-KHOUSE1, 1-800-KHOUSE, and the number 1. You'll also find it on our website, which has been for years, khouse.org, khouse.org. And we do have it available as a download. While you're at the site, don't forget you can sign up for our weekly e-news that comes to you free by email at khouse.org. And new listeners to the program are entitled to a year's free subscription to our monthly news journal, The Personal Update. All you have to do again is call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-KHOUSE1, 1-800-KHOUSE, and the number 1, and ask to be put on the free mailing list for The Personal Update magazine, which comes to your mailbox every single month. Tomorrow on the program, we'll continue the series, Weathering the Coming Storm. Do remember to pray for those suffering for their faith around the world, especially those inside the Islamic world. Pray for us here at Koinonia House. And until next time, on behalf of Dr. Chuck Missler and Ron Madsen, I'm John Leffler.